everyone, and welcome to this episode on the BTS Career Zone. My name is Nikita Phillips, and I'm a candidate support and business development advisor here at Bespoke Training Solutions. Today, I'm joined by Lauren Tudor, who is a qualified financial advisor at Atherton and Associates Wealth Management. We're going to be talking about the journey to becoming chartered because both myself and Lauren are well and truly on this path. So we know the ups and the downs, and we can hopefully provide you with some real insight to help you on your journey too. Lauren, it's so great to have you on this podcast with me. Thank you so much for giving up your time today.
Oh, no problem at all. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you. I know it must be manic towards end of tax year, so we'll get to it as soon as we can.
It's a bit crazy, yeah.
It always is this time of year. And so what I think we'll start with is I'm just going to give a quick overview about what charter status is. For those that sort of aren't really familiar with it and don't really know what it is about. So essentially charter status, it requires two things. It requires the completion of the advanced diploma in financial planning. And it also requires you to have 5 years of industry experience. So once you've got those two things, you can apply to become chartered. Now, in this podcast, we're going to be discussing the Chartered Insurance Institute route, but there are different routes available with different examining bodies. But me and Lauren are both going down this route, and at BTS, we specialise in the CII exams, which is why we're going to be discussing this particular route today. To complete the diploma, you'll need a total of 290 credits. Now, 100 of these will come from your level four diploma. So if you've done RA1 to RA6, you'll have 100 credits towards that already. 120 credits have to be at level six, including AF5, which is the only mandatory unit out of the AF exams. And then the remaining 70 credits can come from any other exam other than LF1, I believe it is. So it gives you a lot of choice to pick the exams that are suitable for you and what you do on a day-to-day basis. And then once you've got that and you have your 5 years of industry experience, then you can apply to become chartered. So I think, Lauren, a great place to start really is to discuss where you are with your charter journey. So what exams have you done so far and what's next for you?
So I started with the certificate levels. I kind of eased myself in gently. So I did LP2, ER1, and CF8. So that's kind of lower level financial planning, the equity release, and the long-term care. So I started there. So I thought I'd get myself back into it. It's been a while since I did my diploma, so I thought I'd ease myself in gently. And then I was actually really fortunate because we're part of St James's Place. The last paper that they were doing was the St James's Place Later Life Planning, which is the equivalent to AF8. So I jumped on that. Whether I was ready or not, I kind of thought, right, it's now or never. So jumped onto the AF8 equivalent, and was successful with that, which was great. And then I wanted to get the mandatory one out of the way, so went on to AF5 after that. And yeah, just recently done AF1, which was good. That was February this year, and then I'm going to be finishing off with AF6, and then hopefully we'll be chartered by the end of the year.
Perfect. Well, it sounds like you've got some really good structure there and you've made some really great progress, which is great. So I think following on from that then, whenever we get anyone come to us and talk about wanting to become chartered, the key question for us is why? And you know, becoming chartered, it takes a lot of time and it takes a lot of commitment. So you need to have a good enough reason for striving to achieve chartered. So I guess, Lauren, what is your why and what's your motivation?
I think it's the commitment that you make to the profession, really. I think sometimes it can be a bit of lack of trust with financial planners, and that's kind of not representative of current times at the moment, but kind of goes way back to even before I became an advisor. So I think if you're going to get to chartered, it demonstrates to clients that you've gone that extra mile, really, and you're committed to them for their future planning, but also to your own personal development as well. So, also, it's quite nice as well because there's only about 5,000 chartered advisors in the UK. So, it end up being in the sort of top 15% in your profession. And I think that just it makes you stand out a bit from the crowd.
Oh, amazing. And yeah, that is an excellent reason. And what I would say to anyone listening today is just lay out your why because it's going to give you the motivation for going forward. And I think from my own personal perspective, I just knew after doing my diploma exams that I wasn't done and I wanted to learn more. And that was why I went on to this. So make sure you've got a good enough reason for going for these exams. But I think, Lauren, that's a really good one, isn't it? In terms of making sure your clients are getting the highest standard of service you could possibly give them.
Yeah,
So
that's right.
perfect. Okay, so you've mentioned then that you've done AF5, and I'd like to sort of zone in on that a little bit, because I often hear sort of a lot of myths around AF5, and people will say, oh, it's just another RA6, it's easy. You know, we'll get people to say, oh, you just need to read a fact find analysis a few days before and you'll be fine. We know that's not the case. So how did you find that leap from RA6 to AF5, and what were sort of the big differences for you?
Well, I had left it a while between the two exams, and looking back, I probably should have started the level six exam straight away. But you obviously you get busy with the day job, don't you, building up your client bank. But yeah, it was RO6 that I did back in October 2020, and then I did AF5 in February 23. I did think they were quite similar. But it's just you just need a lot more depth of knowledge, and you definitely can't just pick up the case study and wing it. It's not one of those exams. You do need to study for it. But again, great experience and helps you with clients. So yeah, a bit of a leap in terms of the level. But I wouldn't, yeah, wouldn't say easy, but yeah, not too bad.
Perfect. Okay. And I suppose for some candidates, then it may well be worth, after you've done RE6, to actually go for AF5 straight afterwards, because yes, there are some similarities in terms of sort of the exam technique, which would really help you. You just need to know that it isn't going to be straightforward, and there is a bit more. You do need to have a bit more depth in there. So actually, if you're thinking, I've just done my diploma exams, what should I do next? Actually, think about AF5, because you can use that exam technique that you built for RE6 to go straight into AF5. So that's something that you can be considering as well, and something that we would often recommend at BTS to our candidates. So perfect. Okay. And you've just mentioned, Lauren, that you've recently sat AF1, which is the Personal Taxation and Trusts exam. I know that you're awaiting those results, but I'm interested to know why you chose AF1 over the other units, because it does have the lowest pass rate of all of the AF units. But I'm also interested to know your experience of sitting AF1 and how you felt that that exam went.
Yeah, so yeah, it was a challenging one. I'm quite one probably one of the odd ones that I'm quite drawn towards tax as a subject. I did know it was going to be a tough one because I think it's, you might correct me, I think it's about 42% pass rate on AF1, so I knew it was going to be difficult, but I just thought it just suited my skill set. So yeah, studying the four main pillars of it. So there's the income tax, capital gains tax, inheritance tax, and the taxation of trusts. They're the four key areas. That's not enough just to revise those. You really do need to go broader and wider on the knowledge in almost every area of tax. So it is quite a challenge, and you do need to put an awful lot into it. So yeah, as you know, the CII always throw in a bit of a curveball as well, so you never know what to expect on the day, and that's maybe perhaps why the pass rates aren't so great on it. But yeah, the one in February was the I know we've talked about this, haven't we? The qualifying rules of real estate investment trusts, which is everyone's favourite subject. So that was part of it. Also, things like student loan repayments, that was not on any of the sort of revision materials, and then excluded property trusts. So yeah, quite obscure elements, but yeah, hoping that I've done enough to get me through. And I'm hoping that I don't have to do it again, actually, because it took up 12 weeks of my life. But yeah, you've got to put the work in. It's a solid subject and an intense exam. I didn't take my eyes off the screen for 3 hours. So yeah, it was a tough one. But yeah, fingers crossed for April.
Yeah, we've all got our fingers crossed for you, Lauren. I mean, I sat AF1, as you know, back in September, and it was the only exam I've sat that's actually physically made me cry. And I would say part of that was because I had a few technical issues. So if you're listening and thinking about sitting the exam remotely, do make sure that all your technology is up to scratch, because it doesn't help. But it is a really, really tough exam. And I think some of the way that the CII word things, as we know, it's not always easy to interpret what they're asking you for. And you know, when you have your multiple choice exams, if you don't know an area, then you might lose one or two marks. But in these type of exams, if you don't know an area, like I was in a situation where I didn't know a particular area and got a 10 marker. And that was sort of, I think, the reason why I felt really, really difficult with this exam. So you have to make sure, as Lauren said, that all of your knowledge is up to scratch. And I'd say one of the ways you can do that is if you go to the BTS Career Zone, you can access our knowledge checker on there, and you can tick off all of the areas that you're sort of you've got some knowledge on, areas that you're really, really good at, and it helps you focus on the areas that you don't know. Because in my experience, I don't know about you, Lauren, but when I was studying, I tended to study the subjects I enjoyed more and the subjects that I the areas that I probably was already stronger at, and I avoided the areas such as, you know, like you say, excluded property trust, real estate investment trust. They weren't areas that I gave that much focus to. But if you've got an exam like the one in February, it is going to trip you up. So make sure that you're putting in the time, as Lauren said, for this particular unit. But it is achievable, and I've got my fingers crossed for you, Lauren. So I'm sure, fingers crossed,
Yeah,
we'll be okay.
I
But
hope
we will
so.
see. We will see. And in terms of your studying, so you've just said you took sort of 12 weeks. What was your approach for the AF exams, and how did you find that was different to your approach for the RO exams?
Oh, it's completely different, really. I took my RO exams through an academy, and there was a big group of us going through it at the same time. We could ask each other questions, and we did it all in 6 months, so we did it on quite a fast track. So you feel like you're in it together, and you kind of got that camaraderie. But for the AF exams, I've kind of done it off my own back. So although there has been a couple of people at work who we've done exams together, I'm kind of on this journey on my own. So you've got to be really structured, and just make sure that I don't know, you're putting in the work, but you're also managing to sort of juggle work life as well as sort of studying at the weekend. So yeah, it is tougher, definitely, but definitely achievable, and it'll be a real achievement when I get to the end.
Yeah, amazing. And I think, like you say, I think one of the reasons I found AF1 particularly difficult was I just didn't schedule in enough time, and I underestimated it. And I thought, you know, oh, I've got through the ROs quite smoothly, quite easily. I'll only need sort of 8 weeks. And it was not the case. And so I would say to anyone listening, if you are thinking about these exams, give yourself the 12 weeks, have a structured revision plan, use our free study plans, which are available on the Career Zone, and that will help you give some structure to it. But also, Lauren, like you said, it can feel quite lonely. So you can jump onto our forums on there and have a chat with other people. But also, if you reach out to people on LinkedIn or social media who are doing exams, then you can always have and build a little bit of a relationship with them. So that's an approach I'd recommend taking as well, because it can be quite difficult when you're doing it by yourself. So do try and build a community as much as you can, I would say. And I suppose, Lauren, what would you say you found the most challenging part of your journey so far?
AF1. Yeah, it was so intense. Even though I did the recommended amount of study, you just, like I say, trying to juggle everything, day job, home life, it is exhausting. I chose to do it, I kind of deferred it. I was going to do it in September. It's just too much going on. So I thought, right, make sure that I've got a clear run at it, sort of quieter time at work over the Christmas period, and really try and get a good head start on it before the exam in February. So yeah, it was definitely AF1 so far. It was a toughie.
Yeah, and it is, and that's why, you know, we get more people deferring success and than passing that unit. So don't underestimate it, and don't think you can just go straight from RO3 into AF1, because RO3 as well, I mean, I'm going back a few years now, but I don't think it covers really anything about trusts. So that's an area that you've got to strengthen your knowledge on as well. But yeah, I completely agree with you, Lauren. In terms of my experience so far, AF1's definitely been the most challenging part. But I think it will be with a pass rate like that. And you've just gotta do put the time and work in it and hope that the results come out of it. So okay. And if you could go back and do things differently, would you change anything?
I would have taken some advice that I was given at the very beginning of my financial planning journey, which is don't leave too much of a gap between level four and level six. I
Yeah.
remember hearing that before I'd even picked up a book, and I thought, oh gosh, that's a bit much doing chartered exams at the same time as you're learning the ROs. But the plan for me, like you, was to always get to chartered. I was never going to finish at the diploma. So I think while you've got it fresh in your mind, and you have, like you just said, you've done RO3, you've got the foundations then for doing an exam like AF1. So it does kind of tie in quite nicely. But yeah, still having that fresh knowledge, I think, would really help. And not leaving it so long, really, to start the job that I love. So if I'd have started earlier, I would have been able to use some of the credits from university, which would have meant one less exam. So
Right.
that's a bit of a killer.
Yeah, and I suppose on the back of that, for anyone that does have a university degree or have done qualifications with a different examining body, it's always worth checking with the CAI whether you'll get any credits, because if you do, it will mean one less AF exam potentially, or one less lower level exam. But no, I would say I completely agree with that, Lauren, and I think from my own experience, I'm going to relate that back to when I did JO2, because JO2 is the trust exam, and I sat that. Was it September 22, I think? And people were saying, oh, sit JO2 and sit AF1 around the same time. And I thought, that's just too much. Like, I don't want to do two exams around the same time. But what I realized is that I'd built all of this trust knowledge up from JO2. And a year later, because I wasn't doing that at work very often, I'd forgotten all of it and I had to do it all over again. But because there's such a big syllabus overlap between JO2 and AF1, it'd be something that if I could go back and change, I'd do them around the same time. So leverage on the fact that the syllabus is such a big crossover. And I think, I've spoken to other people that have done AF4 recently and need a couple more credits. Well, they've done AF4 a year ago or so and they've needed more credits. And I've said, okay, maybe do J10 and J12. And they've said to me, I wish I would have done this all around the same time because I've forgotten all of that knowledge that I did for AF4 and it would have been perfect. Perfect for this. So if you're thinking about it, like you say, don't leave too big of a gap between your units and leverage on that knowledge that you built up. But perfect's okay. And sort of on your day-to-day job then, do you think these exams enable you to be a better advisor and deliver a higher standard of advice to your clients then?
Yeah, definitely. I think even just studying for the exam gives you so much more depth and knowledge, which helps your clients' circumstances. And it helps you as well as an advisor to see further opportunities and how to add value. So I'm reading the text and I'm studying, and it sort of starts sparking ideas and thinking of client situations, and not necessarily now, but in the future, and how could that impact the planning. And it's brilliant, really. It kind of gives you those little sparks that you may have not got if you were studying for the exam. So yeah, it definitely helps with depth of knowledge for the clients.
Perfect. And I suppose from my perspective, sometimes what we find is we speak to candidates and they go, oh, I'm not going to do AF1 or AF4. They're really difficult. I'm just going to go for what I think are the easiest ones. But actually, what I'd be doing is sitting down and thinking, what exams are going to make the most difference to what I do on a day-to-day basis? So, if I deal a lot with tax, then let's challenge myself and go for AF1, because even though it's a tough exam, it's going to make a difference to the outcomes of my clients and the level of advice I'm giving. So when you're planning your chartered journey, think about the end goal and think about why you're doing it. And from then, rather than sort of shying away from the more difficult exams, think about what's going to make you better at what you do on a day-to-day basis would be my advice. And I suppose, Lauren, I'm going to ask you now what your five top tips are for someone who is starting their chartered journey.
So I think number one is just make sure you've got enough time to commit to the studying. You can't wing any of these exams. Number two, have an understanding family. They won't see you as much at the weekend, so yeah, just give them that heads up that for 12 weeks you're not going to be as present as you would normally be. Number three, have a clear route to chartered as well. So knowing what exam you're doing and when really helps. Because you are going through an intense time when you're revising, and knowing that you've got a good clear break ahead of you before the next one, you can kind of have a little bit of a decompress and then go again.
Yeah.
And number four, if you don't pass first time, don't beat yourself up. Go again. You've got additional knowledge. You can build on that. Have a positive mindset. I think that's really important. I like the way you call it deferring success, because it's that you are going to get there. It's
Yeah.
just a matter of when. So hopefully, not everyone passes every exam first time. So it's just having that positive mindset, going again, and you'll reach the goal. And number five is celebrate these passes. They are a huge achievement. It is a lot of work to do, and especially when you've got a lot else going on in your life. So just get yourself a bottle of wine or a box of chocolates, whatever is your sort of treat, and just celebrate it. And I think I might even have a chartered party. I'm that excited about getting there. We can have one together, Nikita.
I was going to say, as long as I get invited, that'll be fine. Oh no, that's amazing. I love all of those tips, especially the one about celebrating, because sometimes we're so hard on ourselves when things don't go the right way, but we don't give ourselves enough credit when things go the way we want them to. So celebrating every little element of our charter journey is something I'd recommend everyone do. But like you say, bottle of wine, breakaway, whatever is your kind of favorite thing to do. I mean, I've said to my other half, once I get chartered, I'm going to book another hot tub holiday breakaway. So that's good, sort of my motivation for the end goal. But I'll just make sure it's not on the same day as your party. So we'll make sure I can attend that one. Okay, and I suppose, so looking back now, if you could go back in time, would you still choose to go on the pathway to chartered, or would you think, you know what, let's just leave it at the plane there?
No, definitely. I would still do it again, even though it has been a journey. I never expected it to be easy at all. And I think when you have a qualification like that, it's not going to be easy. You need to expect to have that challenge, but I just think it's going to be so worth it in the end. And if anyone asks me about fellow, let me have a break first before go any further. I'm kind of looking forward to getting to the end of this year and having that behind me and sort of going forward with that for a while, and yeah, hopefully I'll have that chartered party by the end of the year.
Fabulous. And you know what, Lauren, I was just about to ask you about fellow. We've had a couple of questions in from people that have a few queries about chartered. And one of those questions is what comes next after being chartered? And I suppose, you know, you've got two choices. You maintain your charter status, you do your regular CPD, which I think is 35 hours a year, isn't it? My
Yeah,
understanding.
that's it, yeah.
Or you can push and get a few more exams behind you, and you can become a fellow, which is sort of the highest level that you can achieve. But like you say, I'd focus on getting to chartered first, and then if you do want to do a couple more exams, I think you need 350 credits for fellow, whereas you need 290. So you're looking at a couple more exams to get you to fellow. But that would be sort of the next step if someone wanted to go a little bit further. So I suppose we'll need to have a fellow party when we get to that point as well, Lauren. But
I'm just looking at my route at the moment. I've got my route all planned out, and I have put a couple of exams there for fellow. Whether I get that far or not, we'll see.
I'm sure you will. I'm sure you will. And sort of other questions we've had. What does being chartered mean? Well, we've already sort of covered that off, haven't we? It's really about standing out from the rest of the advisors, I would say, more than anything. It's making sure that your clients know that you've gone above and beyond what's expected to you. They've discussed what experience do you need. Well, you just need 5 years of experience and industry experience, and that doesn't have to be post qualification. So, for example, I have my 5 years of experience in August. So, as soon as I've got my advanced diploma after August, I'll be able to apply. So, for anyone thinking, oh, do I need 5 years after qualification? No, it starts the minute you sort of enter the industry. And I'm just having a look what other questions we've got. So, how do I maintain chartership? Well, that's just your regular CPD, isn't it? More than anything, making sure that you're potentially doing exams, or you're just doing structured CPD or unstructured CPD to meet the requirements of being a chartered advisor. But you do have those requirements anyway, don't you, being a diploma qualified advisor? So it doesn't really make any difference, I would say. It just means that you've got to keep those hours up to date and make sure you're doing that regular every year. But I don't think I've got any other questions. So Lauren, that's been so great. Thank you so much for taking your time out of your busy day to come
Oh,
and
no
help us
problem.
give a little bit of insight. Best of luck with AF1 results. Do let me know how you get on, and I'm
Thank
looking
you.
forward to that chartered party, so I will hold you to that, okay?
Definitely. We'll have it together.
Perfect. Well, thank you everyone for listening to this podcast. We hope you found it useful. If you've got any ideas of any other podcasts we can do in the future that you may find beneficial, then please do let us know. Thank you for coming to the BTS Career Zone, and we'll see you again soon.